What a time, what a time. We are here with the first episode of the Royal Hour. Here we go, man. Here we go. I'd like to welcome everybody in. I know it's been a while. I know it used to have a, you know, a different title, but now we have a new, brand new, spanking new title, logo, intro. The Royal Hour, here we go. It's going to be the same content, but it's going to be a different name. I have a different name. I'm your host, Joseph Royal. You know, I used to be Free Royal. Now I'm going by my government name. Yeah, man, here we are. Here we are. It's been a long time. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff today. We're going to talk about some college football, mainly Colorado, because I've been paying attention to Colorado for the better part of 2 years now. Of course, Deion Sanders is leading the way up there, and we are going to talk a little bit about the NFL, the first few weeks of the NFL season. We are also going to talk about Joshua versus Dubois, which was a very good heavyweight championship match that took place this past Saturday. But the main topic for today we are going to talk about is Mel Kiper putting his foot in his mouth, once again, just further showing that he has no idea what he's talking about when it comes to the game of football. So before we get into all that, please like, share, and subscribe. I want to get this podcast out to as many people as possible. Share it with your friends, share it with your family, share it with your loved ones of any kind. We are here to make an impact. We are here to grow, and I want to get this to, like I said, as many people as possible. So I'd really appreciate that. Now, we can start out first talking about the first few weeks of the NFL season, because it's been very interesting. You know, passing stats were down last year, but this year, I mean, just in general, as Tom Brady's talked about and Kurt Warner tweeted out a few days ago, you know, the quarterback play has seemed to take a bit of a dip, and I think it's showing pretty much across the board in the NFL. Right now, I really feel like the lack of snaps, the lack of reps in preseason is affecting a lot of these teams, affecting a lot of these quarterbacks. And, you know, we can just go over this past week since we got the Monday night game out of the way. We can just go over the scores from this past week. You know, we had the Thursday night game with the Jets blowing out the Patriots. The Jets are starting to look really good offensively. I would not say that they are one of the teams that are struggling with quarterback play, because they definitely aren't. You know, getting those new targets like Mike Williams incorporated, and obviously Aaron Rodgers finding more of a rhythm as the weeks go on with all of these new weapons, or I guess new to him because he barely played last year, only three snaps. It's been very interesting. Breece Hall is proving to be a bell cow in the backfield, as well as being able to catch the ball out of the backfield, make people miss. He's been a really, really good player for them for the past few years, and he's just budding into even more of a productive player for them. So as far as the Patriots are concerned, yikes. I mean, defensively, that was supposed to be their strong suit for the past few weeks. They've actually looked like a pretty dominant defense. But man, oh man, I mean, defensively, they couldn't really hold the Jets in check, couldn't stop them from moving the ball. It did not help the fact that they could not move the ball themselves. I hope they do not put Drake May into the fire, because this is not an offensive line that you want your high-prized, high draft pick quarterback to play behind. That offensive line is all out of sorts right now, and he does not need to be anywhere near the football field right now. I know they threw him in at the end of the game because it was a blowout, but no. Please keep Jacoby Brissett out there. Let Drake May learn. Jacoby Brissett is a veteran. I'm not saying I want either of them to get hurt, quite obviously, but at the same time, you have to take care of your rookie quarterback. So 24-3, the Jets took that one. And then we move on to the Sunday games. The Steelers versus the Chargers. The Steelers took that one at home 20-10. Justin Fields is turning heads right now. If you go on my Twitter page, you can see that I've been very high on Justin Fields for a long time. I did not think that Chicago was his fault. We're going to get into Chicago a little bit later. But I did not think that everything in Chicago was his fault. He obviously did need to grow as a quarterback. But at the same time, he showed flashes of brilliance. And now he's in a more stable situation on Pittsburgh. And you see that he is making great strides as a young quarterback. Russell Wilson was supposed to have that starting job, and they were going to sit Justin Fields and let him learn behind Russell Wilson this year, but Russell Wilson got hurt, unfortunately for him. But fortunately for Justin Fields, he was sort of in a next man up situation, and he's made the most of it. I mean, he has played really well. He showed incredibly, he's shown to be rather incredibly poised in the pocket, extremely accurate in the pocket. In this game, he went 25 for 32, 245. He did have a pick, but he also threw for a touchdown. They kept him relatively clean, only two sacks. Najee Harris, 18 carries for 70 yards. Calvin Austin, 4 catches for 95 yards. George Pickens, 5 for 57. So, if this defense can continue to play the way it's playing, Justin Fields does not have to be a transcendent quarterback. At the same time, he can make plays. As far as the Chargers, we're really going to see what Harbaugh is made of, because he's supposed to be the quarterback whisperer. And obviously, he already has one of the most talented quarterbacks in the league in Justin Herbert. This team has always had an incredible amount of talent. It's been mind-boggling the past few years how they just have stumbled and fumbled their way through some of these seasons. The next game we're going to talk about is the Texans and the Vikings. Wow. This was a shocker to me. The Vikings take this one 34-7. And I got to say, I'm pretty worried right now about the Texans. I'm pretty worried about the Texans. The Texans were a team that I was looking at as definitely, one of the front runners to win that division. But taking a loss like that, and Stephon Diggs' return to Minnesota is not a good look. C.J. Stroud did not play very well. Yes, they're still 2-1, but there were a lot of things in this game that just give me a bit of a reason to pause. I mean, C.J. Stroud, my favorite young quarterback, 20 for 31, 215, one touchdown and two picks. It was a blowout to the point where Davis Mills actually came into the game. Cam Akers, 9 for 21 yards. That's not going to get it done. Stephon Diggs, 10 for 94. He played pretty well. Nico Collins, 4 for 86. So they hit on some big plays. Tank Dell, 5 for 62. Overall, to only be able to put 7 points on the board against this Minnesota team, to me, is a bit worrying as a person who thought Houston was going to be pretty good this year. As far as Sam Darnold, man, I mean, he has really spit in the face of everybody that thought he was a bust, everybody that tried to blame him for the situation he was in New York, playing for the Jets, being drafted as their high-priced quarterback back then. I mean, if you really look at it, Sam Darnold has always had the arm talent. He never really got a fair shake, especially with Adam Gase. I mean, come on. We already know Adam Gase is, where quarterback lives go to die. So, Sam Darnold, 17 for 28, 181, 4 touchdowns, 0 picks. Aaron Jones, 19 for 102. When you sign a free agent running back like Aaron Jones, you expect him to have games like this. You expect him to be the bell cow, so to speak, at the running back position. Justin Jefferson, 6 for 81 and a touchdown. Aaron Jones also had a touchdown receiving. And Jalen Naylor had a touchdown receiving. So pretty good production, especially with Jordan Addison out. When they bring him back, this offense could be pretty damn scary. But definitely cause for concern with Houston. The Eagles and the Saints, in my opinion, this was the game of this first week here. I mean, you could obviously say the Chiefs and the Falcons, that was a pretty good game. But the game of the week to me was the Eagles and the Saints. The Eagles took this one 15-12, low scoring game, but very high quality played game. Jalen Hurts is going to have to fix the turnover issue that he has. He's been turning the ball over at a rapid pace early in the season. The Saints did force some of these turnovers, but one of those passes that he threw across the middle to Devontae Smith, he should not have thrown. He has to get that in check. I know A.J. Brown is out. I know this line is kind of struggling without Jason Kelce. But if the Eagles are going to compete for the NFC title and making it back to the Super Bowl again, they're going to have to fix this Jalen Hurts problem of turning the ball over. It's not just interceptions. It's being irresponsible when he's scrambling. It's being irresponsible when he's trying to get extra yards. He's fighting for extra yards. He's fumbling. It is not good. Saquon Barkley, on the other hand, he had his breakout game, I would say. Obviously, the first game he played pretty well, but this game he had 17 carries for 147 yards and 2 touchdowns. He played extremely well, especially since they didn't really use him in the passing game, only 4 catches for 9 yards. He was used more as a traditional back, and he was running really well between the tackles. Of course, broke off a pretty long run for a touchdown and scored the other one on the goal line. He is really gonna be the key for this team offensively because he can do so many different things, because he's pretty good in pass pro, because of the fact he can catch the ball coming out of the backfield and can be used as a traditional back running the ball. He's really gonna be a safety outlet for Jalen Hurts, as is Dallas Goedert, who had 10 catches for 170 yards, has some key catches in key situations. He's really one of the more underrated tight ends in the league to me. So, as far as the Saints are concerned, for Philly to slow that high-powered offense down to only 12 points is pretty impressive. They also forced Derek Carr into a mistake. He threw a pick, 14 for 25, 142 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. Alvin Kamara, 26 carries, 87 yards. He really didn't have that good of a game compared to what he usually has. He did have 3 catches for 40 yards, but Alvin Kamara has been killing, of course. Also against the Cowboys, he pretty much had a career game that game. So coming off that high for the Saints to be knocked down a peg a bit by the Eagles had to be an impressive win to the Eagles fans on the defensive side, even if offensively there still are some struggles. I still think New Orleans is here to stay. They just face one of the better teams in the league, even among, you know, or even with, I should say, the Eagles' early on struggles. The Broncos and the Buccaneers. This is another shocker. I did not expect the Broncos to be that good this year. I still don't think they're going to be very good, but to beat the Buccaneers 26-7 on the road, pretty impressive. Of course, they have their rookie quarterback, Bo Nix, 25-36, 216. Did not throw a touchdown, but played a pretty clean game. Was not sacked at any point in this game, which is also pretty impressive. He did run for 47 yards on 9 attempts and a touchdown, which is pretty nice. I think they have to get a bit more production from Javonte Williams, who only had 5 carries for 12 yards, and Tyler Beatty had 9 for 70, which is not bad. Overall, I don't know what is going on with Tampa, as they were another team that was supposed to be pretty impressive this year. Mike Evans held to two catches for 17 yards. Tampa was supposed to be one of these teams that were going to impress and, you know, compound the momentum that they had coming from last year into this year. And I just feel like early on, 2-1 once again, yes, that's fine, but at the same time, you can't take bad losses like this at home to a team that actually is not very good. I mean, Sean Payton has been known to be an offensive genius, but at the same time, this Broncos team is probably still going to be bottom four in the league. So definitely something to monitor if you're a Tampa Buccaneers fan. Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan. Here we go with the speech impediments. Packers and the Titans. Packers took this one 30-14. Malik Willis in his return to Tennessee, 13 for 19, 202, a touchdown and 0 picks. He also ran for 73 yards. We know him to be a very elusive quarterback, also a pretty strong arm. Kind of undersized, but at the same time, he has shown a lot of potential. Not going to say there's a quarterback controversy, because I don't think there is. I think Jordan Love is clearly the quarterback of that team. Tennessee 0-3, they're going to be another bottom four team. Nothing really to talk about there. Will Levis just doesn't have enough right now. I think they are in a situation where they signed DeAndre Hopkins, and he's just not the same player he was. And they've lost, you know, a lot of targets. I mean, God, Tony Pollard, 6 for 14, 6 carries for 14 yards, is not going to get it done. I was one of the people that said he was not going to be one of these running backs that you could just completely have carry the load in the backfield. I think he's better as a complimentary back, and we're kind of seeing it right now. He has had a couple of good games on Tennessee, but overall, I'm not a huge fan of Tony Pollard as a star starting running back in this league. Giants and the Browns, look, I know a lot of people, you know, for one reason or the other, are down on Deshaun Watson. And look, the guy's played 12 games in the past 2 years. I'm not about to sit and act like this dude has played every week and looked like trash every week that he's played, because he hasn't. He played pretty well last week. He's still trying to get his bearings. He's been relatively, you know, injured for, what, the better part of 2 years. He's played 6 games the year before that, 6 games, or 6 games the year before this, 6 games the year before that. He has not been healthy. Now, sure, you could talk about all his off-the-field issues, which, hey, you're entitled to your opinion. At the same time, I don't think Deshaun Watson is the only issue with this team. They take a bad loss at home to the Giants, led by Daniel, don't call me K Adams' boyfriend, Jones. Yikes. I'm not a Daniel Jones fan. I'm not going to sit and pretend like I am. More so, I'm not a fan of the fact that they chose not to pay Saquon Barkley. But Daniel Jones played pretty well. 24 for 34, 236, 2 touchdowns. Devin Singletary added 16 carries for 65 yards. Malik Nabers is showing himself to be one of, if not the best receiver in this draft. 8 catches, 78 yards, 2 touchdowns, including the highlight toe touch on the goal line. Amazing player, amazing athlete. Cleveland, Deshaun Watson was sacked 8 times, 21 for 37, 196 yards, 2 touchdowns. But, of course, if you ask Cleveland Browns fans, he's the problem because, you know. Jerome Ford, you know, they still don't have Nick Chubb. Jerome Ford, 10 for 37, that's not going to get it done. Cleveland's supposed to be a bit of a ground-and-pound team. Deshaun Watson should not have to throw the ball 50-something times. It seems like some weeks he's going to have to until Nick Chubb comes back. I still feel like Cleveland can be really good this year. I'm not so down on them like Cleveland Browns fans are, but you know that hardcore fans of football teams and teams in general like to get dramatic, so that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about the Bears versus the Colts, a battle of two very talented young quarterbacks, Anthony Richardson and Caleb Williams. 21-16 was the final here. The Colts took that one, Jonathan Taylor leading the way with 23 carries and 110 yards, 2 touchdowns. I mean, he has been one of the best, if not the best running back since he's come into the league. That dude is a problem. Glad he got his money. It's going to be a struggle for Caleb Williams. I don't know how else to put it. It's just going to be a struggle. He had to throw the ball 52 times in this game, 33 for 52, 2 touchdowns and 2 picks. He did finally break through that wall and get his first touchdown pass. But man, that team, for as talented as the weapons he has are, their line is not good. Their line is not good. Their play calling is not good. You know, DeAndre Swift giving you 13 for 20 yards, you know, 13 carries for 20 yards, that's not good. They did have, what's his name, Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen was out, but I don't know, man. It's going to be tough sledding for them. As far as the Colts, you know, Anthony Richardson is going to be a project, as we already know. High potential, strong arm, pretty good instincts, but I don't see the Colts competing at a high level for the next few years just based on the fact that he really has to mature as a quarterback and Jonathan Taylor will continue to be the star that we know he is. The Panthers and the Raiders. You know, I know everybody's going to jump out of the window. Oh my God, Bryce Young, he just proved he was a bust and Andy Dalton came in and let's be clear. No quarterback coming into the league was going to succeed behind that offensive line. None. No quarterback coming into the league was going to succeed with the lack of targets that he had and the lack of a run game that he had and the lack of talent overall on that team. So all the people that are low on Bryce Young and just ready to call him a bust, just remember who replaced him, a former Pro Bowl quarterback. Do you not think that they tailor-made this offense for Andy Dalton this week? Do you not think that? Do you not think they changed the play calling to make him as successful as he possibly could be? We know that Andy Dalton can deliver the ball accurately. We know that he was, at one point, one of the better quarterbacks in the league. Why is this surprising, considering the fact that they faced a Raiders team that isn't very good, with a Raiders defense that definitely is not very good? There's only so far Antonio Pierce's rah-rah speeches can get you. You have to produce on the field. So this 1 week of everybody being able to crap on Bryce Young because they want to jump on and cherry-pick this one game that Andy Dalton played extremely well, it's no different than last year to me when Browns fans said, oh, hey, look, we have a real quarterback. It's Joe Flacco. Yeah, if you look back at Joe Flacco's stats, it was nothing to write home about. But Andy Dalton did play very well in this game. The Panthers took this game 36-22, led by Andy Dalton, 26-37, 319, and 3 touchdowns, 2 sacks. I wonder how that happened. Chuba, I don't even know how to pronounce his name. He added on 21 carries, I should say, for 114 yards. Miles Sanders, where's he been? 7-17, 1 touchdown. Deontay Johnson, 8 catches for 122 yards and a touchdown. I mean, it's just funny to me. It's like, everybody wants to pin this on Bryce Young, but if we're really being honest, doesn't every team respond like this when there's a quarterback change? Doesn't every team respond with some sort of energy, some sort of rejuvenation? So this 1 week, yeah, you got it, right? If you are a person who believes that Bryce Young can't play in this league, this is your 1 week. We will see if this continues. I highly doubt it. As far as the Raiders, Gardner Minshew, 18-28, 214 yards, a touchdown and a pick. Aiden McConnell, 9-12, a touchdown and 0 picks. He came in late as this was a stomping. The Raiders are not good. They're not. Can we just please rescue Davante Adams from this situation? Can the Jets just make another offer and get Davante Adams out of there? You know, Antonio Pierce after the game, oh, you know, I saw a lot of business decisions on the field, so we'll be making business decisions as well. Who are you threatening? This team is, like, where did you expect this team to go in the first place? Yeah, there were business decisions being made. Who knows if he was talking about Davante Adams? Some of those cornerbacks look like they'd rather be anywhere but on the field. I get it. But the little rah-rah speech at the end and the, oh, you know, I see people making business decisions. And yeah, that's cute, but those threats don't really mean much to many people on that team. I can guarantee you that. It don't mean much to Max Crosby. It don't mean much to Davante Adams. Maybe you're talking about your corners that aren't worth 2 flies smashed, but you sure as hell ain't talking about Davante Adams. You sure as hell ain't talking about Davante Adams. He wants to leave. I don't care what he tells you. He wants to go. Please, by all means, make a business decision and send him to a team that can compete. Because Aiden McConnell and Gardner Minshew are your quarterbacks. So towards the end of the season, when the Raiders picked up a couple of those wins that shocked everybody, and, ooh, Antonio Pierce might be, you know, he should be the full-time coach. He shouldn't be the interim coach. He should be the full-time coach going forward. Cool. The Raiders are still a dumpster fire. They still don't have enough talent on either side of the ball. So, your threats, my guy, they're just that. They're threats. It's words. Next, we have the Dolphins and the Seahawks. The Seahawks took this one 24-3. The Dolphins look like a JV team without Tua Tagovailoa. Man, oh man. Wow. Skylar Thompson, 13 for 19. He got hurt. 107 yards, no touchdowns. Obviously, they only had 3 points. Tim Boyle came in, 7 for 13, 79 yards. Devin Achane, 11 for 30. They were pretty much ganging up on him. Tyreek Hill, 3 for 40. Meanwhile, Geno Smith, 26 for 34, 289, one touchdown, two picks. He's always going to have turnover problems. It just is what it is with Geno at this point. Charbonnet, 18 for 91 yards and two touchdowns. He's a nice young back, man. I like Walker in the backfield. I think Charbonnet has a place on that team, but I do think that Walker is obviously the starter when he comes back. DK 4 for 104 and a touchdown. Seattle's 3-0. They're gonna be a problem in NFC West, man. They really are. They're gonna be a problem in NFC West. Especially if the Niners don't get their injury problems in check. Seahawks are really gonna be a problem. They got some nice young cornerbacks on the other side. They have Charbonnet as their backup when Walker comes back. They got Geno Smith, who's pretty steady, but still needs to work on his turnover issues a bit. DK Metcalf and Jackson Smith and Jigba, two really good young receivers. Tyler Lockett, still very steady at his age. The Seahawks are going to be a problem. As far as the Dolphins, I know a lot of people are saying that Tua needs to retire. I disagree. I hope Tua comes back. I hope he has a great long career. The concussions are not something that is a positive, quite obviously, but at the same time, I don't think it's anything that needs to force him into retirement. I think y'all are going a bit overboard with that. Ravens and the Cowboys. Man. Where to start? Where to start? Where to start? Derrick Henry said on the Rich Eisen show that the Cowboys never even reached out to him. Never even reached out. For a team that's going quote unquote all in, not reaching out to the top free agent running back might not be the smartest decision. You're trotting out there, Zeke Elliott. Look, I used to love Zeke Elliott. I still like Zeke Elliott. He's a very, very steady running back as far as just very smart. He's a veteran running back at this point. He can still pass protect really well. He can still catch out of the backfield pretty well. But he's not consistently going to give you what a Derrick Henry is, and we know that. Jerry Jones says, "Oh, we couldn't afford him." Well, of course, perception-wise, you can't afford him if you don't even attempt to. If you don't attempt to reach out, what's the worst that can happen? He says, "Nah, I want more money. I'll go elsewhere." Okay, but at least you tried. At least you brought Derrick Henry into the facility. You could have tried to pitch him on the culture, the Dallas Cowboys tradition, the storied history of the Cowboys. Nope. Just saw we couldn't afford him. That's it. Every embarrassing Cowboys loss seems to come inside of Jerry's world because everything revolves around Jerry. Everything is about Jerry. Derrick Henry, 25 for 151, two touchdowns. Lamar Jackson only threw the ball 15 times, only had to. 12 for 15, 182, one touchdown. Dak Prescott, 28 for 51, two touchdowns. Rico Dowdle, 8 for 32. Zeke Elliott, 3 for 6. This team, was getting dragged up and down the field. Just Derrick Henry was dog walking these boys. Dog walking them. Just dog walking them. The game looks way closer than it was. Trust me. It looks way closer than it was. I'm not even one of the people that's going to say the Cowboys are in trouble. I don't think anything's going to change with the Cowboys until Jerry Jones steps down from at least being the GM. So, trouble isn't the best word. They're just never going to get to where their fans want them to be, which is the Super Bowl, until Jerry Jones steps down. I don't think Mike McCarthy should have ever been hired. I don't think Kellen Moore should have ever been fired. I don't think Mike Zimmer should have been hired as the defensive coordinator. There's a lot of things I don't think should have happened. This defense looked dangerous last year. They're looking pedestrian, if not, you know, like pushovers at times this year. I don't know, man. It's not looking good for the Cowboys as far as Super Bowl hopes are concerned. After that, you know, coming off of that week one high against the Browns, I don't know. The Ravens, on the other hand, they're looking pretty good. They finally figured out how to integrate Derrick Henry into this offense. So, we'll see. The Lions and the Cardinals. Not much to see here, honestly. Jared Goff, pretty steady, 18 for 23, 199, two touchdowns and a pick. David Montgomery, 23 for 105. Jahmyr Gibbs, 16 for 83. Probably the best two-headed monster running back-wise in the league, I'd say. Pretty comfortably. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 7 for 75. On the other side, you had Kyler Murray, 21 for 34, one touchdown and one pick. Marvin Harrison Jr., 5 for 64. He's going to be really good. I'm still not very high on Kyler Murray. I just feel like there's a reason that they had to put a film study clause into your contract. I don't think that was a nothing burger. I think that was a something burger. Obviously, the Cardinals aren't going to be competing for division titles anytime soon. So, like I said, not much to see here. The Lions just trugging on, and I think they're going to be one of the better teams in the NFC. Rams in the 49ers, this was a game of just basically, it was a story of injuries. No George Kittle, no Deebo Samuel, no Cooper Kupp, no Puka Nacua. Juwan Jennings, 11 for 175, three touchdowns. He came out of nowhere with that game. Brock Purdy, considering the situation, 22 for 30, 292, three touchdowns and zero picks. Very good game. Jordan Mason had no idea who this kid was. He's been playing really well with Christian McCaffrey out, 19 carries and 77 yards. I mean, they definitely found something there, but the Rams pull off the, I guess you can call it the upset, despite there being a lot of injuries on both sides. Matthew Stafford, 16 for 25, 221, one touchdown. Kyron Williams, 24 carries for 89 yards and two touchdowns. Tutu Atwell, 4 for 93. Very impressive. The Rams are one of those teams that will be hanging around towards the end of the season, maybe for the wild card. But overall, don't really think they're really going to be in the thick of things come the end of the postseason. I don't really see it. I think probably a first-round exit, wild-card exit, something like that. But Matt Stafford's still playing pretty well at this advanced age, so salute to him. The Niners just have to get healthy. They'll be there at the end. Chiefs and the Falcons. This was a really good game. Pat Mahomes was not without his issues in this game. He did throw two touchdown passes. He threw a pick that was a pretty bad one. 26 for 39, 217. They did take the win 22-17, but the Falcons are looking pretty nice defensively. Offensively, 20 for 29. Kirk Cousins went with a touchdown and a pick. They need to get more out of this running game. I mean, Algier only had 7 for 32. Bijan Robinson has 16 for 31 and a touchdown. They're going to have to get more out of that running game. But the Falcons are a team that could definitely go on a run towards the end of the season. And the Chiefs are 3-0. Hasn't been pretty. Don't like the body language of Travis Kelce at times. Rashee Rice, 12 for 110. You got to think he's going to miss a few games, at least based on his off-the-field troubles, sometime this season. So we're going to have to see how the Chiefs hold up without him. No Isaiah Pacheco this game. But they got the job done. You know, champions always figure out how to win games like this where, you know, they have guys out or, you know, it just might not be their day. But the Chiefs figured out a way to make it through these first three games unscathed. So, you know, they're looking like a team that obviously is going to be in it towards the end of the season. Let's get to these Monday games. They had a doubleheader this past Monday. Jacksonville took on Buffalo in Buffalo, 47-10. Josh Allen put on an absolute laser show. 23 for 30, 263, four touchdowns. It looked like he was going to, for a second, challenge the single game record. I think he threw four in the first half. Didn't really get much from James Cook this game, but didn't really need to. I mean, they just pretty much demolished these dudes. I don't know what's going on with the Jaguars. It's really a head scratcher. It should be way better than they are at this point. I don't know how to explain it. Trevor Lawrence, 21 for 38, 178, one touchdown, one pick. They brought Mac Jones in late because it was a blowout. Travis Etienne, 11 for 68. Gabe Davis, 2 for 18. That's a guy that you signed and thought was going to be, you know, shoot, if not your first best receiver, your second, right? He needs to produce more. Overall, everybody on this offense needs to produce more. It's just not, they seem like a team that's not ready to live up to the expectations a lot of people have for them at this point. But the Bills, on the other hand, they are looking really dangerous offensively. They still haven't really even gotten their rookie receiver, Keon Coleman, going. If they ever get him going, it's going to be a serious issue for folks. Those defensive losses in the offseason, they don't look like they're really affecting the Bills right now. So they're 3-0. Definitely looking like they're at the top of their game right now. And let's move on to the other game. The Commanders and the Bengals. Commanders took this one 38-33. This was a pretty entertaining game. Joe Burrow seems to be back to his old self. 29 for 38, 324, three touchdowns and no picks. But Jaden Daniels, the rookie quarterback that won the Heisman Trophy last year, man, did he play well. 21 for 23, 254, two touchdowns, a couple of really nice passes to McLaurin. One with the pressure in his face, delivered the ball, took the hit. That was a beautiful throw to McLaurin. And another deep ball to McLaurin earlier in the game. That kid can play, man. We know he's athletic. We know he can throw the ball. Washington is probably a couple years away realistically, but Jaden Daniels has proven early on that he's a player, man. He's a player. He's going to be to be reckoned with for a long time if they can keep him relatively clean in the pocket, keep a good offensive line around him, keep a decent run game around him, keep some targets around him and a decent defense, all the things that the quarterbacks need to be successful in this league. If they put that around him, Jaden Daniels is going to be towards the top of this league as far as quarterbacks is concerned. Terry McLaurin, as I said, 4 for 100, one touchdown, including a 55-yard catch. He played really well. The Bengals, you know, they lost to a team that the Bengals defense to me is where I would say is their shortcoming right now. Burrow seems to be back to form, like I said, but overall, I think that the Bengals defense has a lot of work to do if they're going to compete. They're 0-3 right now. We know the Bengals can go on a run because they've done it before, but right now they're not looking like contenders. They're looking like a team that needs to really go back and reassess defensively what their philosophy is, and I don't think they're a defense right now that can compete. So that is my week 3 review of the NFL. Yeah, it's a mixed bag right now. That's the best I can say. It's a mixed bag. It's kind of hard to pick any team and say they can unseat the Chiefs this year. It doesn't really look like there's any team sticking out that you could identify as that team. So before I move on from the NFL, I have to address this, and I said this was my main topic today, but I'm going to talk about it right now because we're talking about the NFL. So-called draft expert, and I'm doing the air quotes, you can't see me, Mel Kiper Jr. was on ESPN this past week and said that he believes two high safeties should be banned in the NFL. I am not making this up. If you don't believe me, here's the clip.
That should be outlawed.
Two high safeties? You don't like that? Yeah.
When you go to games, yeah. I've been there a ton of Raven games.
Yeah.
And I was years ago when this all started. And I'm sitting there and Lauren was with me. I said, what are these guys doing at? They're like 30 yards out in the back. Yeah. I was like, where are they? They're out in outer space somewhere. How you gonna throw a ball down a field?
Yeah, so you can't.
Again, I would say we say where you have to line up. I would put a rule in place that brings those safeties up closer to the line of scrimmage. Hey, I would outlaw that because is ruining the game. The things we saw back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, we're not going to see now. The routes that we were working on then, you can't run because you got that going on. That should be outlawed.
He said that. One of the things that annoys me more than anything in this world is when somebody completely and utterly unqualified to talk about something is not only talking about something, but they're talking about it in a way as if they're an expert, as if they are a czar, as if they're some bastion of knowledge in that topic. And for somebody that has been so-called following football, assessing players in college and even high school, and how they'll translate to the league. For somebody who's been doing that for years, this is a pretty brain dead take. Now look, don't let this podcast fool you. I'm more of a basketball guy, but I think I know a little bit about football. Who really thinks it's a good idea to get rid of two high safeties? Like, who really thinks it's a good idea to get rid of the too high look in today's NFL with these super athletes? Okay, so let's do what Mel Kiper is suggesting. Let's get rid of the two high safeties. Okay. So there's no zone defense. Right? We've eliminated zone defense. So there's no zone defense because if you play cover two and you're trying to force that throw in between the safety and the cornerback down the sideline, you can't throw that anymore, or you can't run that anymore, so you're not forcing that throw anymore, right? So the great safeties can't play, as rangy as they would be playing if they were playing in cover two where they can kind of just hunt down all those throws down the sideline. You can't do that. Cover three. You can't really play cover three because there are times where, yes, those cornerbacks are not really up on the line the way that they would be if you're playing Madden, for example, and told them to press up. They're going to be bailing regardless, but they're playing the deep ball. So in that case, what you're saying is that, the safety's in a little buzz zone at the barrier, not the barrier, but at the first down marker. Okay, fine. So he's still deep in the zone. So he can't do that either, right? Cool. So we'll have all the safeties around the linebacker positions right in that little slant in area, that little slant dig area, I should say, the little, zone where Kelsey sits down. You're going to have all of the defenders in that area to play zone. Really? So, Tyreek Hill, the way that teams use, you know, if they want to play man on him, they'll do a, you know, two-man, as they call it, two-man under, but it's two-man. That's what it is, right? It's two-man. It's very rarely you're running cover zero on Tyreek Hill. You're running two-man, right? You have the safeties over the top, and you're running man under that. So you can't do that anymore. So now Tyreek Hill will just have a field day. Or the cornerbacks are going to have to play 10 yards off, 15 yards off, the way they used to against Randy Moss. This is his bright idea. Here's an idea. Why don't you take the Peyton Manning way of thinking and implement it, which is, if it's two high safeties, I'm going to run the ball. Because he said this. He kept it very simple. If it's two high safeties, I'm going to run the ball. If it's one high or cover zero, I'm going to pass it. I'm going to take my chances on these man beaters. No. You got people who have no idea what they're talking about. People who don't know anything about football. Mel Kiper. Talking and saying these things. And then the folks that watch ESPN and they get all of their information about sports from ESPN, they're going to run with this. In no way is it smart with the way that quarterbacks can place the ball and how fast these athletes are on the offensive side of the field when you're now going to have linebackers guarding people, you know, every play. It's not even going to be a situation where they can zone up. It's not even going to be a situation where they can blitz. Because you have no safeties over the top, you are now going to have linebackers guarding running backs, linebackers guarding slot receivers, safeties guarding guys when they're not really man cover guys. You're going to have 40 points a game minimum from these teams offensively. With even how bad the quarterback play has been as of late, you're still going to have every game in the high 40s. All because there's no safety over the top, so there's no way for you to protect the deep pass. This is this idiot's bright idea. Really? You know what? We should try it for a week. Just to see how ridiculous the scores are. Do you know how many points teams will put up? Like Dallas, if Tua was there, the Dolphins, Kansas City, Buffalo. Do you know how many points these teams will put up? I don't care what defense you trot out there. I don't care what type of personnel you have. If you cannot play two man under, and you cannot play cover two, and you cannot play cover three, and you cannot play cover four, and you cannot play cover six, and you cannot play any zone coverage, and you have to play man to man, cover zero, or cover one, what are we talking about? This dude's an idiot. And I hope that people learn now, even though they should have known a long time ago, I hope they know now not to pay attention to this dude. Because he has no idea what he's talking about. Now that we're done with that topic, we can move on to a more serious topic or a team that we should actually take serious, a person we should actually take serious. Let's talk about Colorado football. So this past week, Colorado played a thriller. I mean, in my opinion, this was game of the week in college football. It will be a game of the year candidate, in my opinion. They took on Baylor in Boulder, Colorado, and that game went to overtime, in which Colorado took it. Let me find the score really quickly, because for some reason I'm not prepared with it. Colorado took that game. Boy, I played Jeopardy music. 38-31 in overtime. Man, Baylor gave Colorado all it could handle. Colorado, man, they have a big issue up front on both sides. And it's been their issue for a few years, but last year and this year. Their offensive line is better than their defensive line for sure, but their defensive line is pretty weak. They're just not big enough up front. They're not physical enough up front. Shador has all the talent around him, and he obviously has all the talent himself. But, man, if they can't put up 40, you know, 38 in this situation, they're not going to beat many teams, man. They just aren't. Because defensively, they just don't consistently get stops. They're too weak. Guys can run, teams can run the ball against them a bit too easily. And I think that by next year, obviously, you know, Deion kind of has to do this in phases. Like, he brought in offensive targets, then he brought in the offensive lineman this year. Maybe this offseason he'll bring in the defensive lineman, and then finally they'll kind of be complete. But even then, you're losing Shador. You're losing Shiloh. You're losing at least a couple of targets. I know Weaver left this past offseason. So, you know, there were people that said, oh, I think Colorado can win 8 games this year. I don't see that. I don't see that. I mean, at 3-1, I don't – 8 games, I don't know. 6, yeah. 6 is doable. 6 is absolutely doable. Does it get them a bowl game? Hopefully. I'd love to see them play in a bowl game. I think when the term overhated is used, I think Colorado is a perfect example of a team that is overhated. A lot of people really have no reason to hate Colorado other than envy. And, you know, I hate to bring race into it, but for the people that say that race means nothing in this country, oh, it's not all about race. It is. It is. This is a black coach coming into a good old boys club, and he was established in the NFL as a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest of all time, went and dominated in the SWAC conference, and now he's coming to play with the big boys. They don't like it. They're trying to preemptively kill it. So a lot of teams that have nothing to do with Colorado aren't rivals with Colorado, any of that. They're cheering against Colorado, and it's weirdo behavior to me. But regardless, like I said, you know, a great last-second touchdown catch in the end zone by Webster, I believe it was, at the end of regulation. And then they go to overtime and they, you know, they get a stop. They score a touchdown rather than get a stop. Very impressive, man. Very impressive win. The resolve that this team has is crazy. We saw them in a lot of close games last year. We've seen them in close games essentially every week this year. It's been impressive to see the resolve that this team shows. They clearly are not worried about the big lights, the bright lights, the pressure. It does not get to them. And they don't quit. So, very impressive. I'm excited to see how the rest of the season goes. As far as the rest of college football, I'm glad to see Arch Manning playing. I hate that it's under the circumstance in which Quinn Ewers got hurt, but Arch Manning is looking like a player. So athletic, especially for a Manning. So incredibly athletic, and obviously has all the arm talent in the world. Just got to work on his reads a little bit. Other than that, Texas is going to be a real contender. I think Ohio State will be a contender. Alabama looks good. Milroe's obviously a very talented player. Tennessee has a hell of a quarterback down there. So there are a lot of teams to watch. I'm not a huge college football fan, but I've been paying a little bit more attention this year with CFB 25 coming out, so I've been playing that. But I'll definitely keep an eye on it and definitely let you guys know if I've watched or what my thoughts are in the future as far as college football is concerned. Let's talk about some things on my mind. See, I told you it's going to be the same format, you know, it's just a different title. So, things on my mind. Music, right? So, that was a big thing that was on my mind, is just releasing music. I've been working on my music for the better part of the last, I'll say, 5 years. Haven't released any of it, unfortunately. January is the target right now, January 2025, for music releasing from me. And I've done a lot of work to own all my music, to you know, register all my music so I can get paid when I, you know, perform. And that's what's been on my mind, just success in the music business. I don't want to get too deep and too serious, but, like, I've been doing music since I was a kid. I know it like the back of my hand at this point, and it's really sucked to have people ask over and over again when I'm going to release music, and I haven't. It sucks. But, you know, the wait is almost over. And the sooner I can get my music out to everybody for them to listen to it, take it in, let it resonate with them, and form their own opinion, I think the further along in my career I'll get. So that's been something on my mind. I've also been thinking, this has nothing to do with music. I've also been thinking about, as far as the NBA is concerned, I was thinking about, like, so as far as eras, because it's been a big conversation, which it always really is, you know, which era is more skilled, and, you know, Anthony Edwards saying nobody before Kobe and Jordan's era was skilled, and, you know, only Jordan was skilled in his era, and then Kobe came around. You know, like, I've just been thinking in general about the history of basketball and the great players in the history of the game, and I think people in general are too into comparing things and comparing people. There's this stigma these days, and it's really been around for even, you know, as long as I've been alive, where people feel the need to compare two things, pit them against each other. You know, it could be even as simple as, you know, flats or drums, right? Like, Chris Brown or Usher, right? Michael Jordan or LeBron. There's this inherent need to pick which one is better. And I think a lot of that is the lack of nuance that people have, the lack of a gray area that people have, the lack of a middle ground. People always feel the need to have to choose between one or the other. Well, you can't be a Kobe fan. You gotta be a LeBron fan or a Kobe fan. Can't be Kobe and LeBron. It's like, sure I can. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately. So when you talk about the eras in the NBA and things like that, like, there are certain players from every era that would be very effective in any era. Bill Russell would find a way to be effective these days. Elgin Baylor would find a way to be effective these days. Wilt Chamberlain would be dominant these days. Jerry West would figure out a way to be effective these days. And that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize. It's just like, two things can be right. Yeah, while Jordan's era wasn't the most skilled as far as handling the ball, finishing around the rim with both hands, shooting threes and things of that nature, there were people that were ahead of their time in his era, not just him. There are people in this era that wouldn't be able to play back then. And I'm of the mindset that there is no perfect era. This era is not a perfect era. The 90s is not a perfect era. The 2000s was not a perfect era. Obviously, the 70s and the 80s, but quite honestly, if you wanted to compare an era to that of today, it wouldn't be the 2000s. It would not be the 90s. It wouldn't be the 80s. It would be the 70s. Go back and watch the 70s and how wide open the game was. It was wide open. Nobody could cover anybody. Everybody was offensively skilled. They could shoot. The ball was whipping around the court. There was a lot of individualism among the players as far as their style, but it was more of a team concept. Much like today, you have a lot more guys averaging a lot more points overall, right? Like, it's not like guys are averaging more points at the top of the league than they ever were. It's just, in general, more guys are more skilled. But if you look back at the 70s, there were a lot of really good players that could show they were really good players because it was a more of a team dynamic. But then in the 80s, it became more iso ball and, you know, they integrated with the ABA and it became a lot more iso ball and you know, slowed down games, slowed down style of play. A more physical, rugged style of play that a lot of people these days go back and watch and it's hard for them to watch because it was boring, it was rough, it was ugly. The 70s, to me, if you're not going to call this era the golden era of basketball, just as far as the fluidity and the pace and, you know, it was the 70s. So when I think about that and I think about comparing eras, it's pointless. It's pointless to compare eras. Every era had its strengths. Every era had its weaknesses. If I was to combine two eras, I would combine the rules of the 70s as far as the physicality on the perimeter. I'd put it into today's game. And I think you'd have a perfect brand of basketball. So those are the things that were on my mind. I do want to finish off with the Joshua versus Dubois fight because I did watch that fight start to finish and I have some thoughts. Dubois took this one by knockout. Anthony Joshua couldn't meet the count of 10. You know, Anthony Joshua aesthetically looks like the picture perfect heavyweight. And then you see him fight and you see his chin up in the air and you see him stop jabbing and you see the lack of head movement. And you realize he's just wasted potential. Dubois has a very, you know, simple style. He's coming forward, very wide base, a lot of power, a lot of pop, a very stiff jab, a great chin. Do I think he could beat like a Usyk or a Tyson Fury? Probably not. I mean, Usyk already beat him. Tyson Fury at this point, if he comes into a fight with Dubois in the shape that he was against Usyk, I definitely don't see it happening. Thought he was in terrible shape for that fight against Usyk. But yeah, man, you know, Anthony Joshua was getting pieced up for most of that fight. Dubois has a really nice jab. He throws a really nice cross behind it. He has a pretty good understanding of how to put punches together. He has a pretty good understanding of how to go to the body, when to go to the body. He gets really good torque on his punches because he has such a... I mean, it's I hate to do this because, like, I don't want to compare him to, like, an all-time great. But if you look at his style of inside fighting and kind of the wide base that he takes when he punches, it does remind me a little bit of Mike Tyson. Obviously not the speed. Obviously not that amount of power. But just the wide base that he takes. And he does have an incredible chin. But yeah. Anthony Joshua went back to the same issues that he's had of, you know, his chin being up in the air and not protecting himself, not being able to move his head and becoming complacent. He was sticking his tongue out. He was claiming he wasn't hurt, even though Dubois hurt him, you know, four or five times prior to that. He never fully recovered. And he's never going to reach his potential as that top fighter everybody believes he is. Is he a star? Yes. Is he a guy that draws a lot of fans in England? Absolutely. Is he a top fighter? No. As far as in the heavyweight division, he's not Usyk, he's not Fury. Dubois just beat him. You know, if he fought Zhang, I don't think he'd have that good of a time in there against Zhang either. I mean, Zhang is a bit of a punching bag, but Anthony Joshua is pretty reluctant to let his hands go sometimes. And I think it's because he knows that subconsciously his head movement is just not where it needs to be. You shouldn't always have to block punches. You know, that's something that Deontay Wilder, you know, if he was going to get away from a punch, he was blocking it. He couldn't really move his head that well if he did try to slip, which they tried to, you know, Malik Scott tried to instill some head movement into his game plan, and it, you know, that's how he started getting lit up, because you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Anthony Joshua is the same thing to me. He's never going to be this top heavyweight because I think he gets in his own way. Mentally, technique-wise, he still has a long way to go defensively. And I don't think he's ever going to get there. As far as Dubois, they're talking a rematch right now. Maybe Zhang called him out. That'd be a good match. I think that would end in a knockout too. But Zhang has a lot of power. He just knocked out Deontay Wilder recently. But yeah, Anthony Joshua's to the point now. I mean, you might as well make a fight with him and Tyson Fury. Battle of the, you know, well, I won't even say Tyson Fury. You might as well make a fight with him and Wilder, right? Now's the time to make that fight, coming off losses. Wilder said he's not going to retire, so that could be his last fight. That could be his, it'll draw a lot of money. People still want to see that fight for some reason. You might as well make that fight. As far as Canelo and Berlanga, pretty good fight. Berlanga has a hell of a chin. He has a really good chin. He has a pretty good understanding for counterpunching too. Obviously, Canelo dictated the pace, came forward, jabbed his way in, picked his punches really well. He threw great hand feints and great foot feints as well. I mean, he's just the complete boxer, man. He's really good. Canelo's an all-time great. Nothing really surprising from the fight, except Berlanga has a crazy chin. Didn't know he had that good of a chin. Knew he had a pretty good chin, but shoot, I mean, he has a great chin and a bright future. He did win a couple of those rounds. Not many, but a couple. Canelo took him the distance. He hurt Berlanga a couple times, but I don't think he was going to finish Berlanga. Berlanga's pretty tough. As far as what I want to see Canelo do next, obviously a Bivol rematch is interesting. I do want to see him fight Crawford, but I understand why he wouldn't. I also understand why he wouldn't fight Benavidez as well. At this point in his career, he doesn't really need that. I think they need him more than he needs them by far. Boxing-wise, I just don't see many major matchups out there that are in the process of being made, unfortunately. And the same goes for the UFC. I've kind of gotten away from combat sports a little bit just based on the fact that, like, I'm looking for a big matchup, you know? I'm looking for a Haney and Garcia type matchup, and it's just not really out there right now. You have Bones and Stipe, which I don't think at any point, or I should say at this point in time, anybody wants to see that. They can pretend like people do. I really feel like nobody wants to see that fight anymore. And I think that Bones is going to do a great job of dodging, if he does beat Stipe, dodging Aspinall and vacating the title and riding off into the sunset, because I think that Aspinall washes Bones if they fight. Aspinall is every bit the wrestler that Bones is, plus a great striker. He has the speed of like a welterweight at heavyweight. He's huge. And has the footwork of a featherweight. So, of course, if you're Bones Jones, you don't want that fight. But in general, that's my thoughts, my quick thoughts on the combat sports world. I will be back next week with a podcast for you guys, another episode. This has been the first episode of the Royal Hour. Please remember once again to like, share, and subscribe. You can find this podcast anywhere that you find podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, obviously right here on YouTube. It is there for you to listen to and enjoy. Until next time, please, everybody, take care. Peace. We'll be right back.